Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Chris, getting ready for football to start on Friday?
Finally, man. Been talking about it all offseason, and finally get to stop talking now and you actually get to see something. Now, granted, it'll still be the preseason. I expect the scrimmages will be closed, but it'll be good to get back out there and just watch a little football again.
Now, have they... In the past, have they limited media availability, or is it pretty much the same as right now?
Well, before last year, they had open scrimmages for fans. It'd be like two or three scrimmages each fall where you could just go in and watch. They didn't do that last year, and I don't think they'll do that this year. You know, the media availability is somewhat limited, but it looks like it's going to be pretty similar to what we've seen in the preseason in the past.
Now, just broke on the website on TechSideline.com just an hour ago, Cosell Coliseum now being renamed, I guess, for the next 10 years, $500K a year. Do you think that's an appropriate amount?
It's hard to say. Yeah. I haven't done a lot of research with similar deals at other schools. I know it's going to help. I know they're building, they're putting up those new tables on the inside of Castle that they're selling to big money donors,
right.
And so they're going to use part of this money for that. So basically, they're going to use part of this money to build new things that will generate revenue. So while this might be a $500,000 a year type deal, if you sell all those tables, then it really turns into an $800,000 a year type deal, because you're using this money to build those revenue generating projects, the courtside seats, luxury seats, for lack of a better word. Plus, you pay for scholarships. So that frees up money there. So it might be only be a $500,000 deal on paper, but I think it eventually turns into a lot more.
How realistic do you believe those courtside seats really are for us right now?
Well, they've sold 12 out of 14.
Wow, have they?
Yeah, cause that's what Mike Barber of the Richmond Times-Dispatch, I believe it was, talked to Whit Babcock and tweeted out that they've sold 12 of 14. And if they've sold 12 of 14, then they'll probably end up selling all of them. And I think they're $20,000 a table, I want to say.
Wow.
I might be wrong on that number, but they're a lot of money. So it's going to create a pretty nice chunk of change for Virginia Tech. And I think that's one of those things where corporations buy them up and things like that, and they give to potential business partners. It's very, very businesslike. You might not see people sitting there every game, but they're going to be bought and paid for.
Interesting.
Are you surprised it's taking this long to rename the Coliseum? Because I'm wondering, like, why now? I mean, I know it's a good move for right now, but
well,
why
it's,
not
it's,
10
it's
or 15
not really,
years ago?
It's not really renamed. It's still Castle Coliseum. It's just going to be have the
logo,
the logo and you know, Carillion Court. So it's just going to be branded a little bit different. The old athletic director was always asked about getting naming rights to Lane Stadium, and he said, you know, Virginia Tech wasn't near a urban area, and that made it difficult and everything like that. I never really bought that. I always thought, you know, obviously if you can get something for Castle Coliseum, then you can get something for Lane Stadium. And I think Virginia Tech will eventually be able to do that. I don't think Carillion is the type that'll be able to spend as much money as, you know, Lane Stadium is worth. But you know, I anticipate them selling Lane Stadium. I anticipate them selling English Field at some point, maybe even some point soon. And I think that's a good thing. I think these days, as a college athletic director, part of your job description is finding new sources of revenue.
Yeah.
And I think Whit Babcock's a master of that.
And I think Duke had their stadium named like for $15 million or something a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a figure you think would be appropriate for Lane Stadium, or a little bit more?
Maybe. You know, now Duke is in Raleigh-Durham.
Right.
There's more dollars flying around in there than there is in Blacksburg. But, you know, I think Lane Stadium, it's not really about where it's located these days. I mean, there aren't as many big businesses around here like there are down in Raleigh and Durham and things like that. But what you do get with the television contracts these days, I mean, every game's on TV. So if you can get six or seven home games a year, there you are on ESPN or some brand of ESPN every week with your name on it. So I think because of the increase in television deals these days, naming rights deals have actually become more valuable just because you get more exposure that way. So I've never paid a lot of attention to naming rights as far as how much money they're worth. But, you know, I'm not saying Tech would get $15 million. I don't know. But I think they can definitely get something.
You think eventually they'll name the indoor practice facility too?
Yeah, I think that'll probably be more of a private donation type deal. You know, they've actually named the field inside of it. I saw it the last time I was in there. And it's actually the same family who's has the track stadium at Radford named after him. A big business family around these parts. He's actually deceased now, but he's getting these buildings and tracks named after him and everything. But as far as the whole building itself, it doesn't have a name yet. I don't know what the price tag is on that. But I expect that would be more of a private donation, a Virginia Tech alum who stepped up to the plate with a big money donation to have the facility named after them. I would expect that more so than a corporate sponsor. A corporate sponsorship for a building like that doesn't make any sense because that's not going to get you any national exposure on TV or anything like that.
Do you think then that we'll ever see something named after Beamer?
They'll name something after Beamer. I just don't know what it will be. These days you want to sell as much as stuff as you can, man. You know, I think you want to sell the facility. I would love to sell a branding to like the overall Virginia Tech sports complex. Mm. You know, Lane Stadium, Worsham Field, at the Virginia Tech at the you know whoever sports complex at Virginia Tech or whatever. And I think that would be big time. They've got to name something after Frank. Yeah, you would think. Mm. I think they should probably rename Spring Road to Beamer Road, something like that. I mean, you're never going to be able to sell that as a sponsorship, right? And then now he's got the street right next to the stadium named after him. That's probably what I would do.
And they get to walk up that
exactly.
As they go to
that's exactly right.
So that really would be nice.
Yeah.
Some big news that broke the other day: Dahmon McKinnon is back on the football team. As far as we know, do you think he's going to have any type of impact this year?
He'll help out on special teams. Okay. He'll provide depth at linebacker. He could potentially provide depth at two linebacker spots. He's a guy that played more of a whip, well, outside linebacker position in high school, well away from the line of scrimmage, more of a defensive back / outside linebacker hybrid, and that position doesn't fit too much anymore. Tech has a whip linebacker, but he's rarely used these days because of so many spread offenses. So they tried McKinnon at backer. That didn't really take. I think he'd be even less of a fit at Mike, just simply because he's a guy who's used to playing outside the tackle box at all times, and it's really tough to move those guys inside and see them continue to play at a high level. I think you're more likely to move a guy from the inside out and see good play than you are moving a guy from the outside in. But at the very least, special teams depth. Virginia Tech's special teams, I remember in 2013, were terrible because there was a lack of talent on that team, and one of the first places you notice a lack of talent is on special teams. You know, you can say, oh, our offense isn't as talented as it used to be, or we don't have depth at linebacker. Well, that really shows up on special teams, where it's generally your backup linebackers and things like that playing. So I think the fact that he's been added back to the team, you know, will help Virginia Tech on special teams more than anything else.
Do you know why he was off the team in the first place? Was it on his own accord, or it was never released?
They never release anything like that. They get this big statement at the end, at the beginning of each practice, whether it's in the spring or the fall, it's some generic media statement, and say, the following players are no longer in the program.
Right.
And that's why Virginia Tech, we've never had a guy, you know how every bowl season you see, X and X player will miss this bowl game because they're not academically ineligible. Virginia Tech never says whether a guy's academically ineligible or anything like that. They just say, oh, they're not with the program right now.
Yeah, because I remember there was some issue, I think, in 2013, like a hit and run or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it wasn't because of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of him on Twitter. He looked jacked. He had to be. He looked like I think he's like listed at 221 or something, but his arms, I mean, he looked like he was.
Oh,
like
he looks bigger than that, and he can run. He set the inside linebacker position record at Virginia Tech the 40-yard dash with a 4.4 flat. And you're talking about a school that, you know, I think probably used to embellish their 40 times a little bit back in the early 2000s, but he can run. There's no question about that. Is he a natural guy who can play between the tackles as a linebacker? I don't know, but he's big enough and athletic enough to help on special teams.
Well, you mentioned inside linebackers. Is depth there a concern for you?
Yeah, to me it's a big concern. Not so much at backer. You know, I think Deion Clark is good, and I think Jamian Moss had a much better spring than I thought he would have. So I feel pretty decent about the depth at backer. What concerns you at Mike is where Matua Puaka was kind of up and down when he was in the games last year, and behind him – You've got a true freshman in Carson Lydon who's never played a down in college. You've got Sean Hulskamp, who's played in two games on special teams before tearing up his knee. He's a former walk-on. He's undersized. I think he's the best natural linebacker of anybody on the team. He's just undersized and basically has no experience at the college level. So, yeah, I think depth is a big issue there. And that's a spot where they could potentially move McKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
He's not – I don't think he's a great fit there, but – at some point, you got to look at the other guys at the position and say, man, Carson Lydon might not be ready. Hulskamp's an undersized walk-on. Matua Puaka, you know, he was kind of sketchy a year ago as far as his performance went. So he might not be a great fit there, but I still think you need him back on this team for depth purposes.
With the rest of our team being, especially on defense, being so like there really is no hole on any other part of the defense, is that something we can cover up? Or is that going to be something that we're going to really have to deal with and have some issues with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been asked that a couple of times. I think it's really hard to cover up your middle linebacker.
Yeah.
You know, not especially at Virginia Tech, where it's a very unique position. Like, Tech's middle linebacker, in general, cannot play backer, and he can't play whip. That is his one unique position. He's always lined up right there in the A-gap for the most part. In the middle of the defense, and you know, not only that, he has to be, you know, kind of a loud, outspoken guy who knows how to set up the defense before the play based on alignment and everything like that. So I don't think you can cover that up. I really don't think you can. The good thing is, you know, outside of Ohio State and maybe one or two other teams, I don't think there's all that many teams on the schedule who will be able to exploit that position, at least early in the season. Ohio State obviously will. East Carolina is a high-profile passing team, but they lost their quarterback, and you know they're more of a down-the-field passing team. I don't think they can exploit a middle linebacker very much. So, but by the time we roll around into October, when you start playing your Pitts and your NC States, he'll have four games under his belt, and at that point, we should know about him. We should know whether he's ready or not.
Will that show up more in running plays or passing plays?
That's a really good question. I think last year it showed up in the run.
Mm.
You know, he didn't look like he had great change of direction ability, as in the ability to redirect his body in the open field against a running back. I remember the Duke running back juking him out of his shoes quite a bit down there. But then at the same time, you know, you saw Trey Edmonds kind of just run over him in the spring game. I haven't seen him exploited in the passing game yet. It's all been in against the run. I think he has decent strength. I think he's got good straight-ahead speed. What worries me is his side-to-side ability, how he changes directions and things like that. I think his vision will be okay the more snaps he gets. You know, he looks the part. I think he's got potential. He hasn't proved it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, he better be ready for Pitt and NC State with Connor, and then NC State's got like four really good backs.
And plus a quarterback who's mobile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, do you view Mike as the most important position in Bud Foster's defense?
That's a good question. I think free safety. I mean, as important as the secondary is to Virginia Tech, that free safety has to be a smart guy. He has to get the defense set up. You know, he has to be the quarterback of the secondary. Virginia Tech, they rarely have a star at Mike, so I don't know if you can say it's the most important position. But at the same time, they always get at least solid play from there. I mean, they don't put Mikes in the NFL, but they have first team All ACC Mikes like Vince Hall, like Jack Tyler. I mean, guys who are great, great college football players. So you know, if you had to press me and say we need, if you had to pick one guy who is a really good football player right now, what position would you pick? I would probably pick Mike. So I think it probably is the most important, but
you don't necessarily have to have the best player to play Mike.
Well, not the best athlete.
Best athlete. Yeah, right.
You want a natural football player there, whether he's undersized, whatever. Mm-hmm. You want a guy who's smart, who knows how to play the game, and that's why guys like Jack Tyler, who wasn't very big, was successful there, or Vince Hall, who wasn't very fast. And that's why I think Sean Hulskamp, you know, if he can get healthy. He had a great spring game a couple of years ago as a starter for one of the teams as a walk-on redshirt freshman. So I think he's got potential there if he can get his size up a little bit and if he can stay healthy. But, you know, he missed all of last year, so he could still have some rust. But he's that guy who's not necessarily big, not necessarily fast, but just the good natural football player.
Is that would that be a similar comparison with Chase Williams, maybe a little bit? Or
Chase was fast. What you got to realize about Chase, I mean, his closing ability was fast. You know, he wasn't the biggest guy in the world, but you know, I think he was a good athlete. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how great of an athlete Holzkamp is, but I think he's a natural football player.
We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Much more coming up next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And before we went to break, we did a quick mention on Ohio State. And, of course, the suspensions broke last week. Most notably, Joey Bosa will be out for that first game. Do you see Scott Leffler attacking things differently with his absence out?
He was going to be their only experienced defensive end coming into this game. And now they have no experienced defensive ends. And you know, I don't think it's going to change a whole lot, but right. But I think they have so much inexperience in there that you can run some read option and try to suck those guys in. You can play action, roll out your quarterback, run reverses, things like that. And we saw Virginia Tech do a lot of that against Ohio State last year anyway, when they had more experienced defensive ends. So, but I think it makes the job a lot easier for Tech's offensive tackles, Jonathan McLaughlin and Wade Hanson, that they don't have to go up against arguably the best player in college football anymore, and then that's always a much more favorable matchup. Not that Ohio State's backup defensive ends are talented, because they certainly are, but they got three redshirt freshmen in there, a sophomore who played 200 snaps last year, but that was mostly garbage time after Ohio State was blowing teams out. So they have a major lack of experience, and Urban Meyer was not happy with their defensive line depth in the spring. Mm-hmm. So I know he's not very happy about having to suspend Joey Bosa.
So what's one thing, if I'm a layman person who's going to be watching the game, what's one thing against OSU? What's the one thing that I should watch for and say, if I see that, oh, the Hokies really have a good shot of winning this game?
If Matua Puaka plays well at Mike, okay. In my mm-hmm. opinion, if he plays well at Mike and they're not able to exploit his inexperience mm-hmm. in there, if he has a good football game, then I'm confident in the rest of Virginia Tech's defense. I think they'll play well. So if Matua Puaka plays well, then Virginia Tech's defensive effort will be good enough to win the football game. It'll just come down to, will they score enough points?
Yeah.
We're talking to Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com. And, Chris, you did a really interesting piece on available yards and how that's an advanced statistic and how it's better than total offense, per se. Could you just kind of explain to the audience what available yards is and what it means for Virginia Tech this year?
All right, let's say you get the ball on the 50-yard line to start a drive. And you drive 47 yards and have to settle for a field goal. Then you picked up 47 of your 50 available yards on that play.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you pick up all 50 and score a touchdown. You picked up all 50 of your available yards. And the other team starts on their own 20, and they drive 77 yards and have to settle for a field goal. Well, they outgained you in total yards, mm-hmm. but you gained 100% of your available yards and scored a touchdown. So a lot of times you can be very efficient offensively. It won't necessarily show up in the total yards, but if you look at where drives started and things like that, the efficiency is there, and you put up touchdowns. It's like the Cincinnati game against the Bearcats in the Military Bowl. Virginia Tech only had 334 yards of offense in the game or something like that, but their available yards percentage was pretty good. It was very good, actually, much better than it had been the rest of the season. Even if you look back to the spring game, Virginia Tech didn't have as many total yards as an offense in the 2015 spring game as they did in 2014. But the final score, I think, was 27-24 as opposed to 7-3 because they had a bunch of short fields in that game. And they had a 37-yard touchdown drive and a 19-yard touchdown drive and a 12-yard touchdown drive. So wherever they got the ball, they were scoring touchdowns. There just weren't as many yards available for them to gain. And that's good. That's what you want. You want to get the ball with short fields where you don't have to drive as far. And it might not show up in your total yards, yardage statistic, but it'll show up on the scoreboard if you're an efficient offense.
So what sort of statistic there would be a good one? And what's the metric middle level, and then what would be good, what would be bad?
Yeah, if I recall correctly, Tech was about 34-35% last year, and that's pretty terrible. I think ideally you want to get up to around 44-45% this year. I think that would be an acceptable number, and I think Virginia Tech would probably improve by 2 or 3 wins this year if they can do that.
Now, I don't know if you got a check to look at the latest Hokie roster. Did you were you able to see the weights of some of the players?
Some of them had not been updated. Some of them had. The one that stood out to me was Seth Dooley being up to 273 pounds now.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask about that.
Well, you know, he's always been long and rangy. He's always looked the part. I'm not sure how he'll look with 273 on him. But, you know, he was much improved in the spring. He's always been one of those guys you're like, man, I don't know if he can play football or not, but he needs to be the first guy off the bus on road games so opposing fans and players can see him, because he really looks the part. But he was much improved this spring. I didn't get a chance to see. When I went back to look at it today, they had taken all those names off and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, they changed the weights and everything, or just?
No, they even took off a lot of the players' names. Like, they had a lot of the true freshmen listed there yesterday, but they've taken them off, at least the ones who weren't here in the spring. I don't know if they've reverted to back to the old heights and weights. I didn't look that much, but you know, Andrew Forge's name is still on there. So it seems like they were entering things yesterday and you know, maybe saved the wrong copy. I don't know, but I don't think we were supposed to see some of that stuff quite yet. But I expect you know, players officially report back tomorrow. So by tomorrow night or at the latest Friday morning, we'll have an updated roster with updated heights and weights.
See, I would have liked to seen Tim Settle's weight, where he checked
I know. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to. Because, you know, if you looked at all the recruiting websites throughout the recruiting process, he was listed anywhere from, what, 315 to 360 pounds. All right, we get it. He's a big boy. But that's a big difference. So what is it? I expect he'll probably come in between 330 and 340, which would be the biggest.
Big boy.
Yeah, that's a big guy. Yeah.
How big? I'm trying to remember. Terrence Cody with Alabama, was he like 350 or 360?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
He was
back.
One
he
of
was
those. He was one of those traditional nose guards, just lining up over the center the whole time. But Settle's different because he can. I think he's athletic enough to play in a one gap system, like Virginia Tech. I think he's probably the most dynamic guy we've recruited at a position like that, and hopefully it works out, because I think he can make a big impact at some point during his career.
The other guy's weight that I saw, Daddy Nicholas at 225. Is that a little bit too low? I
mean, 225. Are you serious?
Yeah, I noticed that too.
6'4", 225.
Because he was, what, 239 in the spring or something like that.
If anything, I thought he would have added weight.
Tried to add weight, yeah. You know, a lot of it, these guys are big guys, and their weights fluctuate a lot. You know, for example, Mook Reynolds, I think, came in at like 167 or something like that in the spring. And he was up over 180 by the end of the spring. I mean, just being in the college strength and conditioning program. You know, I mean, a guy like Daddy could get the flu for a week and lose 10 pounds or something like that. And you see some of these guys, they'll come in at not their ideal weight at the beginning of August, but they can have them at their ideal weight by the end of August. It doesn't get updated on the official roster or anything like that. So, yeah, if he's actually 225, though, I don't really like that.
Are there any players who need to make a specific weight that, you know, we should be at all concerned with?
Well, I was really happy to see, at least I guess those were accurate weights they posted yesterday. Deion Clark was up to 229, and he was always playing in the 210 to 215 pound range, which is too small, and I always wanted him up between 225 and 235. So it's to me, that's a great sign that he's set to have a great senior season, because he's finally able to get his weight right.
Yeah, some other ones I see, Chuck Clark at 206.
I mean, that's what he was listed as in the spring.
And then Marshawn Williams is 235. I think that's down a few from.
That might be. He needs to keep dropping weight. I'd like to see him get down to around 220 or so, especially with a busted up knee. Ideally, you want to rehab that knee. I think he'll be able to get 100%, get to 100% faster if he would drop some weight. Yeah. But, yeah, he's naturally a big guy, and I think if he was going to drop that weight, he probably would have done it by now.
That's probably true.
So, say they redshirt Marshawn Williams and Shai McKenzie, just for example's sake. Do you have enough confidence in Trayvon McMillan and Reed to make enough plays in the running back rotation?
Yeah, I think so, and I'm not even sure if Reed would be a part of the running back rotation. I think ideally they go with two guys with the third guy getting spot carries here and there. I think that's the only way for your running backs to get into a rhythm. I mean, we saw J.C. Coleman look like a totally different back at the end of last season, and there's two reasons for that. Number one, the run blocking was better.
Yeah.
He started breaking some tackles, which he had never really done before, but he was also able to get into a rhythm. He wasn't getting, you know, 6 to 10 carries in a game like he had been a lot of times in the past. He was the only healthy back. They didn't have any choice but to give it to him, and you know, the more carries he got, the better he got.
So they basically lucked out by having a situation that was almost untenable.
Maybe to a certain extent, yeah. and honestly, it wouldn't hurt my feelings if they redshirted both these guys this year, because I don't want the staff to overthink it about the running back rotation. I mean, I think we have good backs. Trey Edmonds is a guy. He's had 100-yard rushing games before. J.C. Coleman has had 100-yard rushing games now. I mean, Trey Edmonds made Alabama's defense look slow, if you remember that play. Mm. So I think we have good enough talent at running back. We just don't need to overthink it. If those guys can stay healthy this year, then and we can get the rotation, split up their carries in the proper amount, then I think they'll be able to be successful. And I don't want to mess with that too much. So it wouldn't bother me if Tech decided to go ahead and redshirt those two younger guys this year.
Do you see Sam Rogers maybe getting a few more carries?
He certainly could. In fact, he was the only other real tailback that got carries. Yeah. I think he got 8 carries or so in the UVA game last year. I mean, he's a reliable guy with the ball in his hands. I'm telling you, he's got the best hands on the team. Some of those catches he makes as a fullback are insane. Like that one against Ohio State last year where Brewer lofted up just perfectly and he just went up and caught it with his hands. I mean, that guy's one heck of an athlete. So I completely trust him with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite players to watch. I think he was like in midair and was being taken down on the sideline in that Ohio State game. That's the one that always sticks out in my mind. All right, we got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. We'll wrap things up with him next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And, Chris, we were talking about weights of players in the last segment. And speaking of weights, Vinny Mahota at 271. Is that a little bit up there for limiting his athleticism?
I forget exactly what he was in the spring. I saw him at one of the camps, and he looks every bit of that 271. I do wonder how he'll play on the wide side of the field, if he's better suited to just be a short side of the field player. But Virginia Tech generally runs a left-end, right-end system these days rather than their old system where they had generally their faster, quicker defensive end on the wide side and their bigger, stronger defensive end on the short side. So I don't know exactly how they're going to use him at this point. Ultimately, I think he'll be okay there. He's their third or fourth best option at defensive end right now. There's no question in my mind. But I thought he had a pretty good spring there. I just don't know exactly how they'll use him in the scheme at this point.
You did an excellent article I was able to read today about Michael Brewer and his improvement, or that being a big question mark for this upcoming season. And you went in depth into the interceptions and the interception ratio, and it's really not as bad as fans think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as bad as fans think. I mean, Virginia Tech had to throw a ton of passes last year. I mean, there were a couple of games where they threw the ball over 50 times, I believe, and a couple other games where they threw the ball over 40 times, and that's just not typical around these parts. And that was because the Hokies found themselves trailing a lot of ball games. So while it seemed like he threw a lot of interceptions, he has a lower interception ratio than guys like Michael Vick, Brian Randall, and Marcus Vick had for their careers at Virginia Tech. And if anything, Brewer's ratio will probably drop this year as he has more experience in the system and as the players around him grow up a little bit. So he threw some rough ones, but some players in the past have thrown some rough ones too. They just weren't called upon to throw as many passes. I mean, he threw more passes in one season than Michael Vick threw in his whole career at Virginia Tech. Tech just didn't have to throw the ball back then because they just ran over everybody. I mean, it was amazing to watch. And didn't have quite that have that luxury the last few years. And other surprising things, you know, Tyrod Taylor's number one on that list in as far as career interception ratio goes. That's no surprise. But Logan Thomas, a guy who everybody thought threw a lot of picks, was number two. Mm. Sean Glennon, who everybody thought threw a lot of picks, was number three. And then Brewer was right behind those two guys at number four. He's almost in second place. I think he'll pass him this year if he has a good year, which I think he will. But I think that'll surprise some fans. Yeah, those guys threw more picks than other players, but they also had to throw the ball a lot more than guys like Brian Randall, Michael Vick, because those guys didn't have a running game to fall back on a lot of times. I mean, we couldn't run the ball when Sean Glennon was here. The offensive line was bad. For two of Logan Thomas's 3 years, there was no running game at all. He was the only running game we had. And then the last year, the running game was extremely inconsistent up into the last few games. So that's why Virginia Tech has had to throw the ball so much more with Sean Glennon, Michael Brewer, Logan Thomas at quarterback. They hadn't been able to run the ball in those seasons. And the more you throw the ball, the more interceptions you're going to have, right?
So really, if it gets to the point where he's having to throw the ball 35 or 40 times a game, that's not a good sign.
You don't want that. I think he threw 461 passes last year. I think a sign of a successful season is if that number gets below 400. Mm-hmm. It means Virginia Tech is putting teams away earlier, they're playing with the lead, and they're trying to run out the clock, which is the essence of Beamer ball these days. So if he throws less than 400 passes this year, you know, without being injured, I think I'll take that as a great sign for the offense.
So what should we really expect from him? I mean, what should we expect from Brewer this year? If he can he really improve that much and become that good of a quarterback?
I mean, as a guy who saw every scrimmage this spring, I mean, if he hasn't improved, then he really did a good job fooling everybody in the spring. I mean, he completed a very high percentage of his passes, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. And that's all we have to go on at this point. But he has to be better. I mean, his supporting cast will be better. The starting offensive line's better. The receivers aren't freshmen. I mean, they were all freshmen last year. I mean, after they lost Josh Stanford, the only receiver that had ever played a game was Willie Byrne. I mean, it was ridiculous how inexperienced we were. So I think if he can cut his turnovers down to about 10, I think that'll be a major step forward. And some of that will be because he improved. Some of it will be because maybe he doesn't have to throw as many passes this year. But if he can cut his turnovers down to around 10 and Tech has a better running game, then you know they'll win 2 or 3 more games than they did last year just on based on those two facts alone.
Pumped for game day?
Very pumped for game day, yeah. Whether I go to it or not, it depends on where it's going to be, because it's going to be right before kickoff, you know, and I'll be in lot 5. If it's down around, if it's not right next to the stadium, it's going to be really hard for a lot of fans to get to. So I think they'll put it right next to the stadium.
Well, Chris, we appreciate the insight and analysis. As always, TechSideline.com. Go there, read it. I read it every day. We read it every day. And we'll see you next week. Get ready for practices.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks a lot.